Hey, this is Bill Knauer. You're listening to Off the Author, where we talk about writing in life. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing of life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, you can go to pnwa.org. I seem to be having some technical troubles at the moment for some reason. I'm going to attempt to fix them. I'm sorry to be doing this online. For some reason, I don't seem to be able to hear my guest, which is most unfortunate. I'm not going to panic. No, I am not. I'm hoping we'll be able to hear Paul Selig now when I talk to him. I don't know. Oh, no, he's gone too. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what's happened. There seems to be a problem with my microphone, but I'm hoping my guest Paul will call in. Again, I'm sorry. There seems to be some intense technical difficulties. I'm going to see if my guest... hello, Paul, is that you?
I'm on the line,
Paul
yes.
is trying to talk to me, but for some reason, I am not hearing anything, and I don't know why. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to say. Fortunately, there seems to be some technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio, and for some reason, it is not producing any sound that I can hear, and I cannot talk to my wonderful guest, Mr. Paul Selig, unless without the ability to hear him, and there seems to be absolutely nothing I can do to change that. I don't know. It's most puzzling, and so. Sadly, the show may have to be canceled. It just doesn't seem to be any rectifying this problem. I apologize to everybody, particularly my guest Paul, who I think is trying to talk to me, but I cannot hear him. I just cannot.
I'm on the line. Mm-hmm.
For some reason. Ugh, how frustrating. Well, ladies and gentlemen, all I can say is this. I will attempt to have him back on if he's willing to give it another swing. And hopefully whatever technical problems cause this will be rectified. But, I will try one more thing. If that is you, Paul, hang on the phone. Don't go away. Now, here I am. Paul, can you hear me?
I can hear you with a nice echo, yes.
I'm going to try and get rid of that echo here. Hold on a second.
Now, can you hear me without an echo? I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Oh, Paul. Thank you for your patience.
That was
very strange.
Yeah, not to worry.
Well, it's so good to have you on, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Okay. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this interview, and it's a very unusual one because you're the first guest I've had on who at least admits they channel. And let me explain that, if I will. I'd like to tell you a very brief story about myself. A number of years ago, I was very unhappy, and my wife said to me, "Bill, please listen to this teacher. Her name's Abraham Hicks. She's wonderful. She's written this great little piece. She's going to talk about happiness."
And I said, fine, I'll listen to her. And my wife said, no, but you need to be warned. She channels this. Her name is Esther Hicks, and she channels this entity named Abraham. And I thought to myself, I have no problem with that, because when I write, I feel as if, on a good day, as if it's being channeled. And so I had no problem with that particular distinction, and it actually went on to sort of change the way I live my life and the reason I'm doing this work now. So I know you came from a background in creative writing. Does that distinction make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think I make a distinction between inspired writing and channeled writing, which I actually experience as two different things. But, you know, every writer that I know who's a real writer, you know, sort of describes the same phenomena. And yes, it comes through us. Channeling is a bit different, but yes, it makes perfect sense what you're saying.
Okay, so I didn't get to mention this at the beginning, but you were the a former director and of the MFA Creative Writing Program at Goddard College. You're a playwright and educator. You're on the faculty of NYU. But in 1987, you had a spiritual experience, and this left you. Was it kind of suddenly clairvoyant, or was it something that built slowly?
It left me seeing little lights around people. It was I had an experience of energy, and I started to open up psychically. But my abilities have really evolved over the years. So the opening for me was dramatic enough to keep me working spiritually. Frankly, that was really what it was doing. And I studied a form of energy healing, and then I suddenly found out that I was, you know, clairsentient and clairaudient. I was hearing things for people that were panning out as true. And that was a long time ago. That was over 20 years ago. So I was doing that work very quietly while I was, you know, having this other life as an academic.
And what did you think about that? How did it freak you out a little bit, or was it interesting?
It was very exciting. It was terribly exciting. It meant that the world wasn't the way that I had been taught that it was. So it turned everything upside down.
What had you been taught that it was?
Well, you know, I was sort of an atheist, you know, or an agnostic at best. I mean, it just wasn't part of what I grew up with. I think I might have been sort of secretly envious of people with a spiritual life, but I don't even know if I knew what a spiritual life was, you know. Yeah. It was something that people talked about that didn't make a lot of sense. So for me, you know, coming from that, I think I needed some evidence. So the abilities that I seemed to end up with were all things that were pretty tangible and I think on a very simple level were able to override some of my own resistance, because truthfully I've never been very woo-woo, even though, you know, what I do can be called that.
So you've never been woo-woo, but now here you are and you channel.
But
you know what's always funny about that, Paul, is I feel like I talk to writers all the time, and I coach them and I do all this kind of stuff, and I interview them, and a lot of them say, well, I'm not woo-woo. But I feel like, look, if you're writing creatively, you're dipping into the woo-woo pool, because you're sitting there believing in something that doesn't exist in the physical world. I mean, you have to believe in it in order to render it.
Yeah, I agree.
Does that make
with that.
Sense?
Sure. You know, I know now for a fact that my work as a writer was really preparing me for the work that I'm doing now on a number of levels. I mean, I was a playwright, so that was all about hearing voices.
Yep.
And I used to induce trance when I was writing without knowing that I was doing it. So I was always working in an altered state, and I think that's true for many of us.
I think it's true. In fact, it's the altered state that my students love, whether they believe they're spiritual or not, but I describe what I call the flow. And it's always the same experience. You lose track of time. There's sort of an effortlessness involved. You're listening more than thinking. They all start nodding. Yeah. They all enter that space. That's why they write. They don't think they write unless they had that experience on some level.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense to me.
All right. So the book that was sent to me, The Book of Mastery, is the fourth in a series. It started with I Am the Word, The Book of Love and Creation, The Book of Knowing and Worth, and now we've got The Book of Mastery. And these were transcribed from you speaking, yeah?
Speaking,
or
yeah.
Okay.
It's all dictation, all dictation.
Mm-hmm. All dictation. And so when you think about these books, you know, I've got my books, and I think of myself as the author. What do you think of yourself in relation to this thing that I'm holding in my hand now?
Like the weird uncle, you know what I mean? It's not the same feeling. It really isn't the same feeling as having written something. I don't feel that I'm the writer of the books. My name's on the cover. I'm a collaborator. I can accept that. You know, my vocabulary is being used. It's my voice. My memories are being pulled, and I'm often interrupting the teaching to sort of engage with what's coming through. But I don't feel there is it's a very, very different thing. I sort of imagine, I mean, it's kind of like being a surrogate mother or something. It's coming through me, but it's not mine in the same way. And so it's an uneasy relationship, truthfully, because, you know, I'm not the author, and I'm not the teacher. I'm an ambassador of the teachings at this point, because I can speak about them, and that's how my guides have described it. But, yeah, it's a different thing.
And so, and obviously, when the teaching, when you first began speaking the teaching, let's say, being the voice of the teaching, obviously, the stuff that you were saying was the word, the thoughts that were given, that were translated into words, were new to you. In other words, Paul walking around couldn't have met somebody at a coffee shop and said, you know, and launched into the teachings. They weren't already in your conscious knowing. Is that good?
The beginnings of them were, but I'd been doing this work for a while. The beginnings of them were. But, you know, the guides, and I'm not saying that I could have parroted them from something that I knew. It's a very different experience. You know, there are now four books that have been dictated that don't require any editing at all. There's no editing in these.
No editing? No, nothing.
The only thing is that once in a while, the guides will say to Victoria Nelson, the very first book, and Victoria's been on the phone for all of these books, sort of being an active listener for the dictation as it's happening, they'll say, do you have any questions? And Victoria might say something, ask a personal question. That wasn't part of the text because she asked.
Right.
And occasionally I'd get interrupted and I'd curse up a storm. And then it says interruption in the book. It's Paul cursing because somebody was banging on the door interrupting. No, but the rule has been that I can't change things, you know, from the beginning. And the stuff that comes through me, I have a hard time comprehending. As it's coming through me, I feel the truth of it, but I'm grappling with it, and sometimes I'm outright rejecting it because it feels too far out to me or impossible to me. And then the guys that I work with have to sort of deal with that too. It's an interesting collaboration.
That's one of my favorite – well, not my favorite parts of the book, but one of the interesting parts of the book is when the guides will say, now Paul is very upset about this, or they'll say, now Paul really doesn't believe this, or Paul is saying, wait, how can that be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and because this teaching, and I'd like to get into the teaching a bit, but the teaching is going is asking for a complete inversion of a sort of physical, materialistic understanding of what it is to live on planet Earth. It's really asking to flip it inside out.
You know, I haven't thought about it that way, but I think you're probably right. I mean, I think it really asks us to question the very nature of who we are and the reality that we're in and how we treat everybody and everything. I think that's very, very true. You know, I've been channeling for a while, I mean, really for some time before the first book was dictated. So when they first started delivering those concepts, some of them I had heard in prior channelings. And only at the very beginning, then they move past it. But they are asking us to really reclaim a self that they say is who we truly are, and perhaps a bit at the cost of who we've thought we were, which is a small self.
That's right. And there's one of the teachings, they ask you to sort of abandon the idea of I am this husband, I am this writer, I am, you know, because a lot of people I meet think, say, I am a writer. And I always think, well, no, you're not a writer, you're a person who writes, and there is a slight difference, and they kind of go the next step. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit, about like, sort of true identity as opposed to what we think of as our kind of earthly identities.
I'll do my best. You know, I was channeling in Toronto last weekend, and they were teaching, they were taking this to a whole other level. And so I've been trying to grapple with where they're really going, which is they're saying, you know, every time we name anything, every time we recognize something by its name, we're actually going into an agreement with the history of that name. and what it means and what it's meant to everybody else. And that we really can't recreate our reality as long as we're perpetuating what things have been. So they're really talking about transformation. On a personal level, what I think that they would say is, you know, you're not who you think you are, that the true self that you are, which they might call the infinite self or the divine self or the eternal self, is the aspect of you that's ever present and knows everything. And the false self or the personality structure is how we've been engaged. And that the world that we create, and they would say we create it individually and collectively, is kind of like a frame that we walk around with that seeks to fulfill itself with what we assume should be there. So if I think I'm a piece of crap, the world reflects my being a piece of crap. I mean, on that level, it's very, very simple. But if you take it out to sort of the extent of how we are collaborators in creating a reality, it gets really far out there because we all decide these things and then consequently make them so. So they're asking us to reframe our identity.
I think it's beautiful. You know, one of the things I worked with my son, who is diagnosed on the autism spectrum, and one of the reasons he got that diagnosis was he spent so much time in his imagination. He spent more time within his an imagined world than he did in the school, which is where everybody wanted him to be until we pulled him out of that. But I came to him one day after going for a walk on the street through my city, and I came back to him and I said, I had this sort of epiphany. I said, Sawyer, everybody's been criticizing you about spending too much time in your imagination. I said, but look around at the world. We made it all up. We made up every street corner, every stop sign, our language. We invented it. We all live in our imaginations. We literally imagined Seattle, which is where I lived, and now it's here. It didn't just grow out of the ground. We had to imagine it first and then make it real. But isn't in this way, our whole lives are really just smaller versions of that, or bigger versions, maybe. Does that make sense?
I would agree completely. Yeah, I would agree completely. I mean, you know, the guides would probably say, you know, that we're not who we think we are, you know, but who we think we are, we've actually sort of claimed a world in agreement with. And the moment we start moving to something beyond that, we actually have a very different experience of ourselves. But the guides use a similar example in the new book. I mean, they say, you know, two people are standing in a desert or something like this, and a car goes by, and they decide that there's a road there. And suddenly there's shops and a pavement. And that's how a road comes into being, and that everything around us is really commensurate to that. You know, they say, you know, you all complain about the banks, but you're the ones creating the bank. And every time you decide that the money goes in the bank, you're affirming that the bank exists and should be there.
That's right. It's so hard to grasp because we like surety. We like security. Mm-hmm. We like the appearance of security. And I think of the Book of Mastery, I love that it's called the Book of Mastery, which to me suggests learning, which suggests constant practice. I think of mastery as just finer and finer tuning of practice. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's about practicing where your attention is. Where are you going to place your attention? What thoughts and what concepts you're going to keep? Because for me, I have to keep bringing my attention back to the idea of myself as spiritual as opposed to just this machine that can break down and die. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's a practice, because I can get very upset thinking, oh, poor little Bill, and then I have to come back. And that's, to me, what this book helps teach me, at least.
Well, I'm glad, you know, and I think I have a hunch my guides would really like your definition of mastery. I hadn't even thought about it, you know, and when they speak about mastery in the book, they're really beginning to talk about, which sounds pretty trippy to me when they talk about it, but the ability to sort of recreate matter. And the ability to sort of transform the landscapes that we exist in individually and collectively. And I'm getting more and more what they're saying, but the teaching is very much a practice. But I also have to say, I don't think it's an intellectual practice. And that's the challenge because, you know, it's like the guides say, you know, they don't write self-help books.
Yeah.
You know, because that's for the small self. It's the divine self or the true self that seeks to be realized as us, that has access to a whole other level of consciousness and information.
Yes, it is not an intellectual process. I agree completely. I first understood this with writing, where I would tell my students, you're not thinking, you're listening.
Yeah.
Ideally, you're listening, not thinking. And there's a difference. And to me, that mastery that I was describing is a felt experience as opposed to a
Yeah.
You know, it's a practiced felt experience. Totally internal.
Yeah, that sounds very right. I'm not very good with it myself, with the intellectual.
Really?
I'm not
Come
as
on.
No, I've tried, you know, it's not, I can't say, I mean, I grapple with the teachings still. And when I'm
How so?
Channeling
How? How do you
Well,
grapple
you know,
with that?
I'm the radio. This is the issue. I'm the radio,
right.
You know, and this is coming
right.
through me. If it was coming through you, I could sort of sit on the couch and decide what I think. But I'm
right.
sitting there taking dictation a mile a minute, whispering and then repeating in this accent
right.
that seems to veer, you know, across the British Isles sometimes. And I'm trying to keep up. And I'm scratching my head the whole time that this is even happening, although it happens all the time. I mean, I don't prepare. I sit in my chair. I close my eyes. I do my version of a protection prayer. And then
right.
I'll hear one phrase that blocks out every other thought in my head. And it pushes
really?
And pushes and pushes, yeah, until I give it voice. The moment I give that one phrase voice, all of this language comes tumbling out behind it, and there's no stopping it until they stop. And it's always like this. I mean, I'll sit in a chair, and they'll talk for an hour, and the recorder is on for the whole thing, and that's a chapter. And that's
yeah.
it, you know?
That's it.
So my ability to live the teachings, which is what I aspire to, really, I think has been hampered only maybe by my being challenged that it's actually coming through me, and there's still sort of this sense of who am I to be doing this? I'm this college teacher. I just, you know, I have this other life,
yeah.
and this is now my life. I've left my academic positions, you know, and I'm channeling a lot. I've got another book to begin next month, and I'm scratching my head because they just finished the last one like 6 months ago, The Dictator.
So how do you know you've got another one coming?
Well, it was, you know, the guide said we're doing another trilogy, and it's going to come 1 year, 1 year, and then a year and a half.
Okay.
And the first book was delivered on time, and the second book, I hope it'll be delivered on time, too, that this has been this way from the beginning. The very first book, I Am the Word, which wasn't planned at all, I had just gotten, you know, fired from a playwriting gig, and I went to bed for 2 days or something, 3 days, and I was really, I had the worst writer's block of anybody I'd ever met in my life as a writer.
Yeah.
It was terrible. It was really crippling. And Victoria Nelson, who was a colleague of mine on a faculty that I worked at, called and said, you know, maybe this is a good time about to write your memoir about how you became clairaudient. And
right.
I just had decided I was never going to write again. And then this voice
wow.
came through and said, no, we have a book to write, and if you take 2 weeks, we'll do it. And that was it. 2 days later, we started. The book took 2.5 weeks because I took 2 days off to go teach at NYU. And the manuscript was on the shelves by Penguin within 8 months. I mean, the whole
wow.
thing was very, very fast. It was never even submitted. The first time I was invited to channel outside of my home, really, or before students, was at the Esalen Institute at a conference CTR, Center for the Theory and Research, before scientists and academics, and the publisher from Penguin happened to be there and took really the freshly printed manuscript home with them and said, okay, this is it. And it's
wow.
been like that with this. There's been, my job is to show up again and again and again. I'm good at showing up, and I'm getting better, truthfully, at surrendering to the fact that I may never comprehend the entirety of these teachings, especially as they're going now, because they're really moving into, I feel, how consciousness literally
work.
Impacts the whole world and our physical reality and how that can
yeah.
be transformed.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great teaching. I mean, I'm into this stuff and say into this stuff. I've found, to me, you know how I define spirituality? This is my one sentence description of spirituality
mm-hmm.
for people who find it, who think the word itself is too woo-woo for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's this: everything is okay, even though it looks like everything is not okay. That to me is what the practice of spirituality, that it is, everything is always okay, even though your eyes or your mind perceives that everything's not okay. disease and trouble and ISIS mm-hmm. and Trump or yeah. whatever the reasons are, you know, the list goes on. But everything is always, always okay. That's been mm-hmm. But that to me requires mastery, because there's so many reasons I can think of why everything appears mm-hmm. for not to be okay. Does that make sense?
I think it's a great definition. I'm the biggest worrier of anybody I've ever met.
Is that right? Really?
It's ridiculous. I taught myself how to worry when I was about 5 years old. I wanted lines in my forehead like my father had. He said they came from worry. So I sat down and taught myself to worry.
You did?
I absolutely did that.
Oh my God, Paul.
So, you know, I mean, and I was in therapy by 7 for worry. So I'm very good at this.
I'll bet.
And I think the fact that the guides are working through me with this, really and frankly in the face of my resistance sometimes, but also in my great desire to be in this experience. You see, for me, the channeling came later. Clairaudience came early.
Right.
And hearing people, that was in my 20s. I didn't start lecturing in channel until about 2008. And
wow.
I had been doing this for a long time, but I was working with energy. So the energy that comes through when I work is extraordinarily palpable for people.
Yeah.
No, you can feel it. You can feel the currents go through your body. And the books, the guides say, are also sort of energetic transmissions that work with the reader, and they do attunements to vibration through language, which are extremely specific. So I was in it for the energy, and, you know, the information to me was secondary, because the energy, you can't fake the energy. It's in the room. You can all feel it. There's nothing around it. The language was something different. And then the language began to correlate in very, very direct ways to energies that would come through these attunements. And then, kaboom, you know, the lecturing started. Now, I should say, I used to be a heavy, you know, I was a heavy smoker for years. And when I quit, which was probably about 11 years ago, that's when my abilities, which had been pretty prominent in my 30s and quieted through my 40s some, really picked up in my late 40s. It was like a boom. You know, that was it.
Yeah, because smoking puts a damper on things. Because, you know, you're probably such a highly attuned person. You know, I talk about kids on the spectrum. You know, these kids who are Asperger's, and they're seen sometimes as lacking sensitivity, but I think they're incredibly sensitive and have found strategies to try to quiet the noise of the reception, which is coming in so high and so loud for these kids. And you probably have been like that for so long. Smoking would be a great way to dampen it.
It really shut down my central nervous system in a nice way. It created a buffer. For me creates a buffer. Anything that you can do to sort of subdue yourself, I've tried at one point or another. But, you know, that's what sort of comes from clairsentience, which is, you know, I have this odd ability, and I have a practice now as a psychic where, you know, I can step into people. So I can step into your kid, and if you were with me, I'd probably start to resemble him, and I'd hear him, and I'd tell you what's going on. So I'm a bit of like a human switchboard. So if you can imagine being a playwright and being all the characters in the play, when I'm working with my clients, I'm becoming the people in their lives. I mean, it's frankly just telepathy, truthfully. Yeah. We're always operating in consciousness. I've done a fair amount of work with parents, with kids who've had all kinds of diagnoses, because I'm actually able often to hear them. I mean, I was on a TV show a few years ago on the Bio Channel called The Unexplained, where I was asked to read for a mother who was having problems with her child. And that's all I was told. And then I sort of tuned into the child and became him. And, you know, my hands clawed, I began to rock in the chair. And it turned out I was tuning into a kid with cerebral palsy who was speaking to me, who was telling me, he was pretty much shouting, and I was giving voice, and it turned out that the mother had never actually heard her child speak. I didn't even know I was dealing with a sick kid. So there was a long period where I was dealing with people who were trying to hear, you know, family members, you know, that were nonverbal for whatever reasons. And, you know, it's very interesting work. But you see, the thing is, we're always in communication. And I actually think that these kids, you know, that are being diagnosed that way are actually operating in a higher vibration, not a lower one.
I agree.
A higher level of consciousness, and the challenge is being in the body with it. You know,
yes,
that's
I agree 100%. You know what my son said to me? It was interesting. We were watching The Simpsons on my computer, and they had a little opening, and it was a humorous opening. Have you ever seen The Simpsons before?
Sure.
Okay. And so they sometimes do variations on the opening. In this one, they show a monkey, and the evolution starts and up to Neanderthal, and then it goes up to man, and then it starts de-evolving down to Homer. That's the joke. Okay.
Yeah.
So ha ha ha. And so I laughed when I saw that. And Sawyer, my son, said, and he was like 7 or 8 at that time, "Why are you laughing?" I said, "Oh, it's evolution." He said, "What's evolution?" I said, "Oh, God." I said, "Oh, well, here's what the theory of evolution is." So I explained about monkeys and all that. And he said, "Oh." And then he said to me a question I've never heard anyone ask, Paul. He said, "What will humans evolve into?" Right? We think it's done.
Yeah.
Right? And the first thought I had was you. That was the first thought that came to me. Well, that would be you.
Wow.
Because who better than the kid that you have to learn unconditional love for, a kid who won't do it the way everybody else is doing it? What better evolutionary state than that?
Well, it's interesting, you know, that you say this. I mean, the guides that I work with have said that we're entering a whole other stage of evolution. And the things that I'm doing now, and perhaps your son is doing too, and you don't know, you know, is really demonstrating what's to come. You know, I actually think we all have abilities, and we've been living in a world for so long that says you're not allowed to have them, or they can't be so, that we dampen them. My guides actually say that they are who we become when we remember who we are, you know.
Yes.
So we're sort of evolving to that level of consciousness and vibration, and they're here to support us in that realization.
Well, is evolution – I always thought evolution was great. I love change. But the story I didn't like about evolution, which is the one that came from the sciences, was that it was essentially a movement away from death. It was just about not dying, you know, survival of the fittest, yada, yada. But I thought, well, why isn't it a movement towards love, towards what we call God or love or unconditional love? That makes more sense to me. It's not about simply avoiding death for as long as possible, but a movement towards an understanding of what we are, which – is love. I think that's the word we use. That makes more sense to me.
Well, it makes more sense to me, too. It really does. But you see, the old model is all about mastering the physical world.
Right.
You know, and when you realize that there's more than the physical world that we can see, your relationship with the physical world has to change. I mean, I've been given more evidence than a lot of people just through the nature of the work that I do every day, that we're not just our bodies. If we were, I wouldn't be able to step into somebody else and feel, you know, what's going on there, you know, or it just couldn't be so. Am I still not frightened of death? I don't know that I'm frightened of death. Do I not want to die? Yeah, I want to be here, you know.
Right.
However, you know, as long as we're sort of moored into making sure that our basic needs are met, and operating in fear to do so, because there's nothing wrong in having your needs met,
right,
you know, we're going to be sort of reinforcing this paradigm that says that we can't go farther than that. And I think how we treat one another, you know, is pretty indicative of how we operate as a world. And we don't treat each other terribly well.
Not a lot. But there are people who do. And there are more and more examples of it. There's more and more examples of compassion. And I am sure that when you go and channel now, I'm sure more than 4 or 5 people show up. I'm sure there's some pretty good crowds, in fact. And it's and I've been to hear Abraham Hicks once, and there were just 500 people there or something. So more and more people are turning their attention in this way, I think. And I think it's growing and growing. And I think it's a lovely development, frankly.
Yeah, well, I do too, and I'm grateful for it. And I think the world has changed a lot even in the last 10 years. I mean, it's extraordinary that, you know, that it's accepted at the level that it is as even a possibility. It was, you know, Deepak Chopra endorsed the new book, and I realized when he did that, which was very generous of him, he was really endorsing the phenomena of channeling by doing that, you know. And, you know, the idea, I think artists as a group, we've always kind of gotten it, you know, that you can tap into a field and you can call on it. I'm just actually tapping into dictation, you know, word for word for word. That's the difference.
Yeah.
You know?
You just take it that much further. But, I mean, that story I told was really true. I felt that when it was going well, if I was lucky, I felt like I hadn't written it. And, in fact, I was going to give a keynote or something, and the woman was introducing me, and so she read a quote, this quote that she really liked from something I had written, and I thought, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I thought, that's useful. I don't remember. Okay, I guess I did write that, but that's awfully useful, whoever wrote that. But it was me, supposedly. You know how that
goes. I used to love it when I was a playwright. Whenever I would use a word, whenever a word would show up that I never used, I knew I was really writing, that something was happening, because it just wasn't in my frame of reference. And it would usually come through character, because I was a playwright, so everything was coming in voice. I think the parallels are enormous, and I think that, you know, I don't know, I think, why I sort of took one step farther into this kind of work. It really wasn't intended, I have to say that. It's still a head-scratcher to me that this is what has happened. I'm grateful for it, but I'm still
scratching my head. Those are the best kinds of things to happen when we can't... Actually, you know what, Paul? I've given up planning my success. I've given it up because it's never worked. The stuff that I've had success, quote-unquote, with, that has come in the oddest ways, and it was never the way I planned it, and so I finally decided I can't plan anymore. I've got to give it up.
Uh-huh.
It's not apparently not up to me, at least not in the way I thought.
That's great.
We got one call. We have time for one caller, and then we're going to probably have to set you free. Is that you, Jeffrey?
It is, Bill. Good job in fixing those BTI.
Oh,
blick.
Please. Yes, I know. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Wonderful, wonderful interview, and thanks for hanging in. It's fascinating. Paul, I'm also, speaking of fascinated by the process of channeling, and I'm sorry if these sound like neophyte questions, but I just don't know what the experience is like. Is it almost like a second sense of consciousness or this ethereal presence beside you, or I'm sorry I'm not phrasing it well, but
what does it actually feel like?
I can try to describe it. When I first started, which was, you know, 20 plus years ago, I literally used to feel like somebody had their lips pressed against my forehead and was impressing the words into me, and the vibration would be the sound. Now I feel the energy often surround me. It's present with me. And again, I feel this one, I do a little prayer protection, and then I hear this one phrase fill my head, and it blocks out all of the other thoughts. It literally, my consciousness recedes into the background, and this other thing comes forward. I equate it to, you know, climbing into the back seat of the car and letting somebody else drive. Sometimes I'm napping in the back seat. Sometimes I'm hanging over the front seat saying, don't hit the tree over there. I don't know where this is going. I don't trust it, which is when I interrupt. But it's really about receding my own consciousness and allowing this other thing to come forward. There's physical phenomena, too, that happens with this. I do a lot of groups around the country and around the world now, and the guides do this one exercise where they look at people and they go around the room, and my eyes, I don't see it because they're my eyes, but I have hazel eyes, and they seem to run a very, very light blue when I'm working. So there's this physical phenomena that's sort of attaching itself to the work and all this energy. So for me, I like the energy. The language I'm almost trying not to think of as it's coming through me, but it's a very physical process for me, and partially because I hear the words, I whisper it, and then I repeat it in a louder voice rapidly.
Right. Well, Paul, this has been a great conversation. It could have been way longer, but I must set you free. And before you go though, I usually ask my guests, I'm not sure, this just doesn't seem appropriate. I usually ask them what writing has taught them. If writing has taught them anything, it's taught them what. But I want to rephrase that for you, I guess. If someone wanted to sort of begin on their own spiritual journey, if they're interested in what we're talking about here, what would you say would be a good place for someone to start? Could someone who said, I'm interested in something beyond just how do I make enough money every day? What would be some advice you might give to begin a spiritual relationship to their life?
Just ask.
Just ask.
The moment you ask, and I promise, things will start to happen. You know, the world will start to shift to accommodate that request. It's been my experience. It's been the experience of every woman I've met. But when you, I started to pray. That was what I did. I hit a wall in my life. I didn't go looking for this because my life was going so well. And I actually heard a voice. That was in my case. But anybody that I think that says, you know, I really would like to grow spiritually, how might I go about it? Or ask God or the universe or whatever you want to call whatever's out there for help in this, and then expect it to come. I think people will be very, very happily surprised.
Yeah, that was the case with me for sure. So good advice, Paul. Well, listen, Paul, this has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I say good luck with the work, but I don't think you need it. I think you're just going to, well, I don't know what to even say. Go on, just keep doing it. I look forward to the next triplet of books.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was exciting. Thank you for hanging in, everybody. Oh, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, but we got there. Thank you for hanging in. I will be back next week. I hope the audio is working fine because I'll be talking to suspense writer Tammy Hoag. We'll be going another direction. Until then, well, just go out there and start asking. Ask.